Hey, welcome back to another bonus episode of the Enduring Churches podcast. I'm Alan Small, and I'm here with Trent Young. And once again, we are not alone this week. And Trent, why don't you go ahead and introduce our guest for this week?
Well, Alan, I'm super excited that we get the opportunity to interview Chris Schiltz. He and his family have been serving as missionaries, and they are home in the U.S. now. I don't know if they consider this home or not. Chris, we'll get you to kind of explain that to us. But Chris, I just want to say thank you so much for taking time to spend with us today.
Yeah, thank you. You're welcome. Glad to be on here.
So, Chris, start us off. Tell us about your family and where you're serving at.
Yeah, so I've been married to my wife, Jamie, for almost 16 years now. Grew up primarily, we live primarily in Northeast Oklahoma, and moved to Malawi about 3 years ago. We've got five kids. Oldest is 14, youngest is four, three boys and two girls. You know, our oldest son, his name John Brody, you know, he's a very social person, loves to be around people. The second born is our daughter, Selah. She's really the responsible one in the family. She kind of keeps us together. And I don't know, maybe those with larger families know that kind of the oldest daughter is a huge help. And then third born is Isaiah. Isaiah loves people, loves to talk. He's probably going to be the biggest one, but he is a big teddy bear. And then fourth born is Ezekiel, and he is a ball of energy. He is fearless. He's an animal. And then youngest is Anastasia. She's four, and you know, she's a joy. I mean, she just is kind of everywhere. She's always smiling and laughing. And so yeah, that's us. That's the Schilt family.
And so where are you guys at? How'd you end up there?
Yeah, so we are in Malawi, in the capital city, which is called Lilongwe. It gives kind of the short version of the story. I'd planned on going to India, long-term mission work, and I have a slight case of asthma, and the medical people at the International Mission Board said, no, there's too much pollution. It wouldn't be good for you. And so actually at the time, we had sold pretty much everything. We sold our house. We sold all of our belongings. Because when you go to a place like India, you can't send a crate over. You can't bring anything. And so we were living with my parents, had sold everything, and were just waiting to go, and then got the word that we couldn't. And so, and then we found out that we were pregnant with our fifth child. And so we just kind of heartbroken, but then we took out a map and just started praying and asking God to show us what to do, if he was still calling us to go, and just seeking counsel from others. We still felt called to go. And so we just started talking to missionaries in different parts of the world, and found that there was a place for a place in theological education in Malawi. Talked to leadership there and felt that it was a good fit for our family. And man, it has been. It's been a wonderful fit. We see how God has used all these different circumstances to bring us to the right place.
So, Chris, explain to us what it is that you're doing in Malawi. And this is a little bit different. You were talking to us beforehand and explaining that. So explain what you're doing there in Malawi.
Yeah, so my primary assignment is to be a lecturer at the Baptist Theological Seminary of Malawi. So I know that's different in many parts of the world. You think missionary, you think somebody who is out in the bush planting churches and doing evangelism and things like that. But where we are, 20, 30 years ago, the Lord really worked there and brought a lot of people to faith. Where we are, there are, I think at this point, close to 2,000 Baptist churches. If you look on Operation World, it will tell you that something like 80% of the people claim to be Christian. And so we just feel that with things as they are, the best thing that we can do as a mission is not to really be on the front lines planting churches, but to be more in the background, to be equipping, encouraging, to be just ensuring a good doctrinal foundation for our Malawian brothers and sisters. And so, like I said, that's my primary assignment at the seminary. We do some other things. I mean, I'm not just lecturing. We do try to get around to different parts of the country and to you know, worship with brothers and sisters and to be an encouragement, to preach and teach here and there. But the primary thing is at the seminary.
Well, that's kind of what Trent and I have a heart for, of course, is walking alongside our churches and pastors and leaders and trying to help them endure. And so it sounds like they're kind of already in that process of what does it look like to become an enduring presence for Christ in a community. And of course, as we see in our own nation, that can be a struggle, that sometimes we can drift from our mission and from our purpose and from our focus. And so I'm sure there's a lot of things that you've noticed right up front that were a lot different. So what were some of the adjustments that you and your family had to make to get used to living in Malawi?
Yeah, the first year was hard. Yeah, there's no way around it. It was just hard. You know, with the International Mission Board, step one is to learn language. And so our primary assignment for the first year was language learning. So for me as a husband and father, I was used to being out of the home and working and that kind of thing. That all shifted to where I was at home most of the time. My wife and I were learning language together. We were depending on Malawian brothers and sisters to help with the kids, to continue their homeschooling. You know, my wife was preparing curriculum and lesson plans and things for the kids, and then Malawians would teach it. And so, I mean, just in that, there was a lot of transition, you know, trying to figure out what my role was going to look like now as being at the home most of the time. And just being constantly humiliated, to be honest, because you go from a fully, at least I like to think, a fully functioning individual in American culture to be just totally incapable of speaking, you know. So there was that. And then, you know, for our kids, there's a lot of adjustment, especially the older ones. It was hard for them. They were saying goodbye to close friends in the States and then just shifting to where, I mean, they didn't know anyone, didn't know the language. We were sitting in church services that were sometimes 3 hours long. There's no children's church, you know, there's no, we were all right there together, all seven of us, listening to a service in another language. And so there was just some challenges with that. And then also just life takes longer in that part of the world. You don't, you know, one of the things that we've kind of marveled at since being in the States is, you know, if you want to, I don't know, if you want to cook a Mexican dinner, you can find some ground beef and some taco seasoning and pull some tortillas out, and in relatively short period of time, you have dinner ready. Whereas over there, I mean, cooking, it's all by scratch. And so it takes longer, cleanup takes longer, just seems like most everything takes longer. On the plus side of that, though, what's really cool is that we have a lot of time together as a family. It gets dark earlier, and so we're not out that much in the evenings, and so we're cooking and cleaning and doing all those things together as a family. So really, we've had more family time on the mission field than we've ever had. So that's something I didn't expect. But that's been a blessing for sure.
And Chris, before we visited, I was kind of looking on the map to familiarize myself with where Malawi is. And if you're listening to this today, you might not be familiar with where that is as well. It's kind of on the east coast of Africa, is that right? And below Tanzania. And so,
yeah.
And right. You were talking about your kids. I wanted to ask, have your kids picked up the language quicker? Typically kids do quicker than us adults.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually they hear, they can hear it, especially our oldest daughter. She can hear it pretty well. But English is actually the, I guess say that like the trade language of the country. So there is some English around, and you can, in a lot of parts of the country, you can function in it. We've encouraged the kids to do it. We've not forced them to. You know, I think probably when we go back, I know that two of our kids have told us they're interested in learning it. So we'll encourage them in that. But yeah, most of them, they still, like I said, they know a few phrases, but they don't. They couldn't engage in a conversation.
It most likely will frustrate you about how fast they pick it up versus your struggle to pick that up. Right. It just seems how it goes. You know, as a cross country coach, you know, I do some coaching on the side. I certainly wouldn't mind coming over there and doing a little scouting. You know, I'm sure there's some great runners. We always talk about the East African runners, and certainly I'm sure there's a lot of them there as well. And so, you know, I love the endurance side. So what are some of the things that you're seeing over there? Have you encountered some pastors who've been pastors for quite a bit of time over there? And what would you say is the secret to some of the successes you see?
You know, I think it is interesting that we do feel, especially us newer missionaries there, we feel like we're standing on the shoulders of giants. There's been great missionaries in the past who've done a great work. There are leaders, Malawian leaders, that have been there for a long time. You know, and you could just, you know, some of these guys, they're a pastor of a church, and they're doing that while they're overseeing four or five. I mean, some of them will tell you 20 or 30 other church starts around them. They have a tremendous passion for the Lord. You know, you can just tell that they love Christ. And deep down, you know, some of these guys have been through some struggles. There's all kinds of interpersonal things that can happen. But really, I just think that it comes down to simply just a love for Jesus.
Chris, as you're sharing about that, and I know that you're teaching in the seminary, I was going to ask, how many students do you have in your seminary there, and how many students do you have contact with?
Yeah, so we have, you know, it fluctuates, but right around 60 students typically at the seminary. We're actually looking at soon opening some extension centers in various parts of the country. But as it is right now, there's just the one campus in the capital. And yeah, there's somewhere around 60 students. Each new year, we bring in anywhere from 10 to 15 new students.
So as you've been dealing with this, I know that you all came back early from your furlough, and that partly because of the pandemic, I'm assuming, but how has this pandemic, the virus, affected life in Malawi? Has it affected them? What's been the outcome of that?
You know, I think it's been interesting with Malawi. When it first started breaking out, it seemed like the stance, especially of the church, was more to say, you know, we're going to trust God. We're going to trust God that it's not going to come here. And they just kind of held that stance, you know, and then it started showing up in April. And what's been interesting with the country is they're right in the middle of some major, I don't know about major, but it's significant political issues. The president, the sitting president now, he was the president before, and they held an election last May. And Supposedly he won, but the vote has been contested, and they're in the process of working through a revote, which is supposed to happen at the end of June. What's common is that a lot of people think that there is no COVID in the country, and that people are just saying that it's there so that they can push off the re-election. And so, for a time, the country almost went into lockdown, actually about a week before we left the country. And the night before they were to go into lockdown, the court filed an injunction and said, we're not. And they never have. And in fact, I was talking to my colleagues a few days ago, and they said, no, it's really, there's a few people wearing masks, but for the most part, they shut down schools, and the airport is shut down. But other than that, life has just kind of gone on, which is, it's a little bit concerning for me because they've been bringing people back from South Africa, Malawians that were in South Africa, bringing them back, and they've been coming back with the virus and not necessarily staying in quarantine. So I'm really just praying for our brothers and sisters over there in the middle of this.
Yeah, that's got to be a challenge. I think it's a challenge all over the world to figure out how to live with this and in spite of this and through this and all those matters. So tell us some of the things. I heard you mention a little bit ago that, you know, your kids were sitting through a 3-hour worship service. I think most of us, the thought of a 3-hour service is astronomical, right? I mean, we were 45 minutes in our first Sunday gathered back this past week. So tell us some of the other differences that you see, and why do you think those differences exist?
Yeah, you know, in some ways, it's just funny to me because, like I said, we grew up, me and my wife both grew up Baptist in Oklahoma. Sitting through a Malawian service in some ways feels just like you're sitting in an Oklahoma Baptist church service. I think a lot of that, there's been a lot of influence. In fact, I believe that the Oklahoma Baptist Convention had a partnership with Malawi. And a lot of the forms and the structure of the service feels very common. I mean, you have some hymns. A lot of them are familiar hymns that they've just translated into Chichewa. You have a responsive reading. Somebody reads a psalm. In the sermon, even the form of the sermon feels very familiar. But then, I mean, you also have the fact that they dance throughout the whole service. So that doesn't feel very, very Baptist. In fact, when I tell them a lot of our churches in America, especially Baptist churches, don't dance, they look at me like I'm a stranger. I mean, they can't believe that I think that.
It's just because they've seen me dance.
Right. but I mean, the service is very happy, is very joy-filled. There's dancing, there's singing. They don't like silence. So, I mean, if there's a pause in the service, somebody's going to start singing. It's beautiful in that way. It seems like the pastors have a little more camaraderie about them. They often have a pastor fraternal that meets for encouragement and kind of counsel with one another pretty regularly. I mean, they're also a little more ecumenical. It's not unusual to see Baptist pastors working together with Methodist or Presbyterian or something like that. So that's different. I mean, I think it's a positive thing. Another difference is, coming from America, we're very, I think, much more individualistic. African culture is definitely more communal, and so they have that aspect about them. It's also just this kind of hierarchical perspective that they have. I mean, people that study culture will say, there's cultures that have low power distance and then high power distance. Malawian culture is more of a high power distance culture, which is to say that, you know, a pastor or a teacher or someone has a lot of authority. You need to respect that authority. And so there is more of a tendency to see a pastor or a convention leader as kind of more important. There is this feel. And I think part of it is that there's a lot of influence from the Presbyterian Church, which has a little more of a, the local church listens to leadership of those above them. And it feels like the Baptists are trying to kind of follow that. And so the autonomy of the local church has a little different feel to it there. So, that's going on. And then the other thing that we're really dealing with there is, in Baptist churches, there is a lot of influence from prosperity gospel. There is a lot of influence from what we call neo-Pentecostalism. So a lot of the charismatic movement is influencing the church. And so, yeah, in some ways it feels very normal, and then some things just feel very, very different.
Chris, I think some of the ecumenical work would be a breath of fresh air in the U.S. I'm jealous of that. And so as you're going to be here in the States, I know that you're going to be busy going around. I'm looking forward to you coming to visit our folks soon at Patterson. And then you're going to be doing a lot of that, but then you're planning to go back in January, you said. And so will you actually get to move back into your same home and all that kind of things? Or do you have to go through the whole process of finding new housing at that time?
No, the plan is to go straight back where we came from. It's our desire. Me and my wife talk about it all the time, that we want to, of course, God can change he may reveal new things to us and lead our family in a different way, but we just want to be a people who are faithful where God has called us. And we've got a missionary colleague who has been in the same house for like 30 years, and everybody knows him. His people know him. He knows the language. He knows the culture. He just understands how to do ministry where he's from. And we've just looked at that and said, we want to, Lord willing, we want to be that. We want to understand Malawians. We want to understand their language, their culture, the way they think, so that we can better serve alongside them and mutually encourage one another.
Yeah, that's great. It's so neat to see even in the mission field. We talk about pastors enduring, but missionaries enduring for the long haul. That's hard, and it's a challenge, and so many of them are unable to last for the long haul of ministry in their mission field. And so we certainly want to encourage you and pray for you in that. Now, when you go back, you're going to resume your teaching duties, and I would assume seminary looks a little bit different from traditional seminary in the States, that you have a little bit of a different focus. Is that true?
In some ways, we actually, our seminary runs very similar to an American seminary as far as the scheduling. The students come, they live on campus. The semesters are somewhere near 15 weeks long. I know we have some colleagues in other parts of Africa that they run shorter terms and do different things, but ours feels a little more American than a lot of them I've been around.
Well, I know that Alan and I both pray for God to call people out of our church families to serve him. And so I want to ask you, Chris, what would you say to someone who might be praying about serving Jesus in ministry, period, or maybe even serving Jesus in another country?
Yeah, I think I would repeat the same thing that was told to us when we started kind of walking down this path, and that is to be faithful in honoring Christ, in being an evangelist, in discipling, in doing all those things that you think you'd be doing overseas, that you be faithful to do them right where you are and do it now. You know, even for us, I mean, like I said, we spend a lot of time just living life. I mean, there's a lot of time in the kitchen. There's a lot of time doing laundry. I spend a lot of time just trying to pay the electric bill or the water bill. And so, you know, I think there might be a bit of a misconception out there that the missionary life is kind of glamorous. You're out, you know, every day in the bush doing evangelism and that kind of thing. And, you know, what we've experienced, you do some of that, but most of it is just living life, although a little different than it is in the States, but you're just doing life. And so most of my opportunities to share the gospel come as I'm doing those very kind of mundane things like paying the electric bill or the water bill or whatever. And there's no magic switch that when you get overseas that suddenly you become a super Christian. And so my encouragement would just be to be faithful where you are, to, yeah, obviously, take those steps as the Lord leads you to pursue mission work overseas. I mean, we pray for more and more of that. But just as much as that is to just be a faithful witness where you are today. And if you work on that, then there'll be fruit from that should the Lord call you overseas.
Those are some great words of encouragement. Right where you're at, whatever God has you doing, that's what we need to put our effort and attention in. And so I love that thought. So, you know, you've got to give us a little bit of insight, though. Let's say we wanted to come visit you in the mission field. So tell us what our favorite meal would be.
Yeah, so, I mean, the typical Malawian meal, it's this food that's called nsema, and they take maize. It's kind of like sweet corn, but it's a little heavier, and they pound that down. And that's, so I mean, if you go over there, you'll see, usually the women are the ones that, take the maize and they pound it, or they take it to the mill or whatever. And so they just have these massive shoulders. They're so strong. Anyway, they take that, flour that comes from the maize, and then they boil that down and they kind of make a patty out of it. And they eat that pretty much with every meal, lunch and dinner, every day. And then a lot of times with that comes beans, or they'll take pumpkin leaves or mustard leaves or spinach, cook that down with some tomatoes and onions. It's really pretty good. Sometimes they mix it in with a peanut powder. And so, yeah, that's kind of the staple food. It's good. They also, Lake Malawi, right there, runs along most of the border of the country. It's a beautiful, absolutely beautiful lake. And they get fish from there. The fish is good. Yeah, but those things are kind of the staples. You can kind of find more American-ish foods around, but those are kind of the staples.
All right, Trent, are you in for that?
I'm up, man. It sounds all good. Right. Now my mouth's watering. I'm hungry.
We shouldn't podcast around lunchtime, should we?
That's exactly right. Oh, goodness. Well, Chris, we're just praying for you and your family that God gives you a good stateside time, but that you're refreshed and empowered to go back. And I'm so thankful for the ministry that you have where you are. We're excited that you've taken time to be with us today.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity, and really appreciate your prayers. I mean, I'll be honest, especially during that first year, I mentioned that it being challenging, especially doing that transition with the kids. And there were just moments that we felt that the prayers of our partners in the States were just, that's what was keeping us going. So we really do treasure that.
Well, that's certainly important. You know, I believe that every enduring church has a heartbeat for being missional and for missions as well. And so I don't think we're going to ever see great churches that don't have an outward mindset and want to care for and help and support mission activity that's going on all around the world. And on behalf of Trent, and again, we say thank you, Chris, for being a part with us today. And again, our goal is to help you and all our churches endure. So if there's any way we can come alongside you and help your church, even if it's maybe even just having a conversation about how you can be more involved in missions, we would love to talk with you about that, but we are available. Please stop by our website at enduringchurches.com or check us out on Facebook. Well, we look forward to having you on our next episode. Thanks for being faithful listeners out there, and don't forget to share us with someone else.